Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center and have on the political right, John Dugal.
Hey, it's good to be with you, even though we don't have a live audience today.
I know, we were spoiled. And on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello. Hey, listeners. Not only the live studio audience, folks, but just continue to appreciate that people are listening, and it's really nice to hear from you every now and then.
Amen. So I'm going to use a word and then let you guys pick the topic. Nothing burger.
Okay.
What is that topic?
Trip to China.
You got it, John. You got it. How do you rate what happened? I mean, it turned out to be kind of a non-event, right?
It's one of those things where I say you got to do those kind of events. But last week I said I didn't expect much out of it. And I didn't see much coming out. And even though there's some promises to buy beef, to buy beans, and maybe even Boeing airplanes, China always promises more than it actually delivers at the end of the day.
Yeah, a lot of status quo. I saw a comedy where it showed one of those Chinese finger pull things. And they said to President Trump, what'd you get from it? And he goes, I got this, you know, little chamber. What do you call those?
Yeah, the
Chinese handcuffs.
Yeah.
Chinese handcuffs where you can't pull out.
Your fingers
get stuck in there. And they said, well, what did China get? And they said, Taiwan.
Taiwan, yeah. Unfortunate, but I think it just continues to be a real demonstration of this administration's inability to actually deliver for the American people, whether it's negotiating around prices, where we're seeing extreme price increases for, you know, everyday Utahns, or if we're talking about what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz. We got nothing.
We did get an admission that China says that Iran should not have nuclear weapons. So we did get that.
We also have the G7 countries meeting this week. This is the U.S., U.K., Japan, Italy, Germany, Canada, and France. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in those meetings.
What do you anticipate will come out of this?
I think they're going to talk about public debt levels. It'll all be economic. But who knows? We'll see.
And can I just quickly check in on how is our debt?
Oh, it's terrible.
It's terrible, isn't it?
$39 trillion and growing.
And growing. Has Republican control done anything to slow that down?
No, and
just
Democratic control has not done anything. It doesn't matter which party's in charge. It just keeps growing out of control.
Well, and it's a problem everywhere, by the way.
Yeah.
Not just in the U.S.
Right, so. Right. And then we got changing demographics, which place even greater pressure on it, you know, old age pensions and so forth.
We had a primary over the weekend. This is GOP Senator Cassidy, who lost his primary bid. He was campaigned against by President Trump, so two Republicans did better than he did, and they go to the primary, and a sitting senator is left on the sidelines, Shireen.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, this is a person whose politics I certainly am not a fan of, but he really did come out in his concession speech on Saturday and say something I think we should all be paying attention to and frankly be proud of him for. And basically what he went on to say is when you participate in democracy, things don't always go your way, but you don't pout, you don't whine, and you don't claim the election was stolen.
John.
Well, one of the key things. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no. Did you follow this?
A little bit. I mean, this is one of those things where Senator Cassidy had tried to play nice over many years with Trump, but you know his disloyalty, if you will, over the January 6th and his vote to impeach the president over that was one of those things the president could not overlook.
Yeah. We also got the vote on the new Fed chair. Kevin Warsh is now the chair of the Federal Reserve, replacing Jerome Powell. Shireen and John, this was the most partisan vote in Fed chair history, by the way.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's much more unanimous, you know, because they respect the position of the president to nominate, and they're usually some esteemed, Fed economist of some sort.
So you had a Democrat, John Fetterman, crossed over and voted with the majority of the Republicans, and a couple of Republicans crossed over to vote with the Democrats.
Yeah. So let me give you something to watch for. I like Kevin Warsh. I think this is a good pick. A lot of the things he wants to do are going to take time, and you won't see him instantly. But one of the things he doesn't like is what they call forward guidance, the way the Fed talks so much about what it might do in the future. And in doing so, markets react and it changes things. Some say it's transparency. But Warsh, I think wisely, in my opinion, sees it as a little bit out of balance that the Fed is talking so much. Might be better just to let the numbers speak for themselves. So that's something to watch. And that's something, by the way, he can control. That's the reason I brought it up is the Fed chair gets to decide when do you have a press conference, gets to be the last editor of what they release.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the big thing to watch.
Well, it'll be interesting. I think this is going to be a difficult time for whoever is in this chair, considering the challenges of our economy, in particular inflation. I'm sure you're tracking a lot of other things related
to this. John and Shireen, we saw a 3.8% CPI number in April. 3.8%. Now rounding, that's 4.
Mm-hmm.
That's twice the target, which is 2.
Yeah. And what is
so
that again?
You don't see them dropping the rates then. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Yeah, so it's this crazy thing where you have an economy that's jobs are slowing, but the prices are overheating.
Heating.
And that's a dynamic that the Fed doesn't like, and they have to deal with it. And on balance, I think they care more about the price level than they care about unemployment.
Unfortunately.
And,
yeah.
And President Trump has been condemning Jerome Powell over not lowering rates. So you're saying Kevin Warsh is now going to be painted into a corner.
Yeah.
How does he deliver on the calls that helped put him in there?
Yeah, he's got a tough job, but I'll tell you, he's very experienced and knows his stuff, and he'll be good.
Good.
So, hey, do you want to talk any other national global news, or do you want to go into some local?
We can go into some local.
We got lots of local news, and let's start with something that you brought up, Shireen. Great Salt Lake.
Yeah.
So we had some changes over the weekend. Brian Steed, who's the Great Salt Lake Commissioner, on Friday announced that he's going to take a new position at Utah State University. So we lost our Great Salt Lake Commissioner. And he will no longer lead what's called the Janet Quinney Lawson Institute of Land, Water, and Air, a wonderful institute up at Utah State University. So I'm watching this news pretty closely.
Yeah. So I think the thing I'm a little bit concerned about, I wouldn't say I'm like, I don't have strong feelings one way or the other about Brian Z, but I do feel like that is an important role. And I think he's been fair. I think he's been engaged. I think he's helped build momentum. He's built trust.
I'm telling you, if you looked at his resume and his experience for that job and then saw behind the scenes the way he was working it, he's super skilled.
So that is something that I'm worried about when I think about what happens now, especially when we understand that the czar, right, is a person who can really be pushing ahead when we understand that things like a massive data center that nobody wants might have long-term implications on our, like,
nobody wants.
They can really, well, ask any Utah that is not in our legislature, basically.
There are many Utahns.
A Canadian mega dude that really wants it, but I think beyond that, it's pretty hard to find an average person. But there is, like, there's a really important role for that person to play in trying to move forward solutions for Utahns, and I'm worried that we'll have lost momentum.
John, would you be the next Great Salt Lake Commissioner?
No,
that'd be a good job for you?
I don't think I'd be a good choice for that, but I do think we have many Utahns that would probably be very well qualified in terms of water issues, in terms of government relations experience that could play a good role.
I'm in that camp as well. I want to also mention Anna McIntyre is a good friend of mine. She's been the deputy at Land, Water, and Air at Utah State. She's now promoted to the executive director position. She's a terrific talent. That's going to be really good for USU and great for our state.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so love that. Okay, John, you asked me a question. Why don't you share with the public what you asked me?
I ask you lots of questions. There was a headline that I saw, which was questioning about the University of Utah president's travel with his wife.
Yeah.
And I just saw the headline. I didn't have a chance to read the story. So what's the rest of the story?
Well, the way I would...
And I think it was the Salt Lake Tribune that had that headline.
Yeah, the way I would say this is, you know, there's all this information about the travel, the dollars spent, where they went, what they did. I want to just mention that the University of Utah is a large enterprise. It's an enterprise that requires...
Very large.
Yeah, that requires the chief executive officer, if you will, to be in on a global stage, that requires a lot of relationships with donors and faculty and the like.
Well, remember, only part of it is about the school. A big part is about the hospital.
Yeah,
and another big
yeah.
part is about the sports.
It's a premier public research university with a almost $1 billion research budget, a lot of Olympic partnerships and roles. And I think anybody who takes a close look at this will see a couple of things. Number one, quite unfair going after the president's wife. A lot of that travel.
You're saying the Salt Lake Tribune would be unfair?
Oh, yeah. I am. A lot of the travel is reimbursed. That was not clear in the story. A lot of the travel self-funded, not clear in the story. And it's also this notion that this woman is an ambassador for the university and represents the university on a global stage. And she's unpaid in that role.
Uh-huh.
And for me, it brings me great satisfaction to know that our president is traveling with his wife and representing our university in that way.
I'll just say, kind of outside of this, whether I think there's plenty of room for debate and want, you know, a want for transparency around this. It is just actually quite common that CEOs are negotiating partner travel as part of the work that they do, in large part because many of these roles, especially leading a university or leading a large health system, for example, say, often require these kinds of commitments across many time zones, sometimes across countries. And it is this unpaid role for the partners often. So I unfortunately think this is kind of common. I will just also give a shout out. I like the Salt Lake Tribune, and I'm proud to say that it is now paywall free. So you could have clicked through, John, and read that, because they have now done enough
yeah,
funding
that's
to,
good.
To make sure you can
Would
read these articles.
Would you agree, though, Shireen, that the central question isn't how much do you travel? Where do you travel? You know, how expensive is it? But does that travel serve the mission of the institution and pay dividends to what you're trying to accomplish? And I would say the answer to the second question is a resounding yes.
Yes.
And the story didn't cover that.
Yeah. And I think it's hard sometimes to capture that kind of information, but it's mm-hmm. really critical when you think about what these roles demand of people.
Yeah, for sure. John, well, I'll give you the last word.
And see, one of the key things, one of my concerns with news media too often is they've got a headline that wants you to click, that tries to convey a certain narrative without really getting into the nuances that you talked about, Natalie.
Yeah. So stay tuned. I think you'll hear some more information that will be helpful. Let's do one last issue before we take a break. I'm not going to do data center, but let's do MITA.
Okay, let's do MITA.
Our president, Stuart Adams, has been getting some heat about donations that have been made to his campaign or to campaigns that he favors, all related to the Military Installation Development Authority. I know President Adams to be a man of incredible integrity. I think a lot of this is just, you know, in the by and by. I'm not worried about it, but Shireen, you're welcome to disagree.
Yeah, okay, you know I will. I guess I would just say this. What I see here is a fundamental problem with the way that politics runs in our country. I know that it probably sounds radical to say, but since we do not have any public financing of campaigns, people have to go out and raise money. The way that they raise money is through relationships that they build. When you sit on a board like MITA and there are interests, whether that's in developers or in strategic technologies, whatever it may be, data centers, whatever it may be, you can bet that if you are working at a high level, that those people show up with checks. That is how politics works in this country. Now, the thing that's interesting for me is that Stuart Adams is really in a real challenge. He has two primary mm-hmm. challengers mm-hmm. who have collected signatures. And I do think Utahns are a little tired of how this works. But are they tired enough to pursue, you know, maybe some different or more fair ways to get people in office? Probably not.
Yeah. John, this is the age-old question. Do political contributions influence your decisions?
I'm going to say usually they don't. Usually okay. contributions.
This is from an elected official.
Usually the contributions
this. I mean,
come.
A former.
Okay, I'm former too, and usually they do.
And the reason they don't is because they're usually after the fact. It's because they're giving contributions to folks that generally back the concepts that they agree with.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a limited, government low tax guy, so various folks would contribute to my campaign because they favor that. I never had a contribution that was, okay, here's a contribution. We really want you to support this activity. That never happens.
So that's actually illegal, but showing up after the fact is part of the agreement. That's how it works.
Hey, let's take a short break.
That's absolutely not how it works. So if you're living in that arena, there's something very wrong on that side. But I'm going to say President Adams would have gotten these contributions whether or not MITA even existed.
I really find that hard to believe because he didn't have those relationships and they've never shown up for him in the past.
Hey, let's take a short break and we'll be right back. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gurbani and John Tugel. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gurbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. You two, let's do a little reflection on the Wilkes Climate Summit.
That sounds great. I hope the listeners enjoyed a live program. We think it's the first ever, maybe, for this.
Unusual
it was my
for
first.
Us. Unusual
yeah.
for us.
Yeah. So this.
You spoke before we actually did the podcast.
Yeah, I did. And you guys are making me have to remember what I said, but I essentially...
There were words of wisdom, and they call for you to run for governor, so that's
yeah,
what we
yeah,
remember.
Yeah, however it goes. You know, I...
Are you going to take campaign contributions?
I painted the picture of the political middle.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've talked about the middle station, the golden mean, the notion of liberating what's right and true and conserving what's right and true. I feel like we do that on this program.
When I teach you about riding the fence.
When I hear John say something I agree with, that's right and true, uh-huh. you know, and I want to conserve that. And then when Shireen has an idea that, like, you know, is real creative and different and takes us out of the status quo, that he liberates something that's right and true, I agree with that. So I just kind of walked through the importance of mutual accommodation.
Yeah.
That was the term I tried to use. And I actually quoted the LDS prophet who's done a lot in that area of mutual accommodation. This is his legal background. And he's even in his not in his role as prophet, but in his role as a member of the 12, spoke at the University of Virginia and made that point. And I quoted him. So that was kind of novel.
Interesting. Well, what I reflect on is just how interesting and incredible it was to sit in a room full of people who really are building knowledge, innovation, intervention around some of our most pressing problems from all around the world. So mm-hmm. there were folks there from all around the world. And when you think about, I feel like I was a little bit taken with, was it Huntsman's in the last campaign, this sort of idea about Utah being the crossroads of not just the West, but mm-hmm. of the world. Mm-hmm. And when I sit in rooms like that, I believe that we have even greater power than we are currently accessing. And I think that we can bring together people who can solve some of our most critical problems. A piece that I always get interested in is that connection between what's happening in those rooms and spaces mm-hmm. at, you know, the university and how that gets out to everyday people. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. I know yeah. there's another section of it coming where you get to hear from the winners. It's really a wonderful component. I think academics and a strong academic institution is essential to our advancement as a community. And sometimes
academia liberates what's right and true.
Yeah. I feel like that relationship certainly frayed in our state, often attacked by our legislators. But I think that there's a lot to be gained when we are able to bring these connections and solutions down to people.
John, did you feel well treated?
I was well treated there. One of the interesting things I took away from some of the comments and questions was that, well, I think everybody in that room was very concerned about climate change. I think they were trying to articulate that their findings and their identification of the concern is much more nuanced than gets reported and fed out to the public. Mm-hmm. The headlines, the stories, whatever, seem to portray it as much more catastrophic rather than the nuance that they're trying to articulate.
Yeah.
And so what that says is they also have a communication challenge of trying to get their message out so folks can then act on it. So when Shireen talks about people overreacting and attacking, was partly because they're not necessarily talking to this group, but they're hearing the information from another group.
Yeah. There's a principle in environmental work that's, you know, science for facts and process for priorities. And I think that's a little bit what you were saying there and what some of the faculty were saying mm-hmm. there is we go do research and we have all these interesting causal things that we learn or inferences that we can make. But it really takes leadership, process, policymakers to debate. That's where the political middle comes out because you have to look at people who have different life experiences.
Yeah.
And they come to different conclusions. So, well, the data center loomed large at this event.
Did.
Yeah, it did.
And it also loomed large at Kilby Block Party. Where it
got talked about from stage? Yeah, tell us more.
It turned up on a couple of large performances. So Haley Williams was the second to last closer on Sunday night and had a big display. Kevin O'Leary's face on it and
said no.
And
was it powered by a data center?
And then there
that's
were,
a good point, John.
There were kids in the front row with their phones up just saying Utah does not want a data center. And that's, I think, 90,000 people attended that. And I got to say, got a warm reception.
They were using data centers to take on data centers,
John. I always love the the Facebook or the Twitter warriors who were, you know, using the data centers to complain about the data centers. They do want data centers.
I think there's a pretty big difference between this hyperscale data center and maybe more responsible types of development, which it seems like you would also be a fan of.
Well, this is where the political middle will loom large, right? Yeah. Because a smaller one is starting to recognize that you got to take these ideas from both sides. So we have our House Speaker, Mike Schultz, who through some, you know, pretty good investigative work, this Elevate Utah pair that does social media news work, but they found that he has some properties in rough proximity to the data center, raised some questions. Speaker Schultz, he's basically making the point that he is concerned about some potential environmental impacts from the hyperscale data center. I'll read a quote. He said, "I want to see what those studies are before I can make a decision on this one way or the other." So that's different than a lot of his colleagues. I mean, Jason Chaffetz has come out saying, we need to do this. Governor Cox, he's, you know, backed off a little bit, but he's basically made the case for AI in our state.
Yeah, Mike Schultz in this place, he's a rancher. So he's coming from a rancher perspective of what that means to ranching, and those other ranchers feel similarly. I think the ranch that's close by is family owned, him, his siblings and parents, something like that. He's got some other property, it sounds like, in Box Elder, but it sounds like it's 25 miles away. There's a certain distance there. But when you look at Jason Chaffetz, reading what Jason put out, It sounds like he portrayed that he introduced this deal into Utah, which then makes me wonder if he's getting paid to lobby on behalf of the deal.
Interesting.
And I don't know that. I just, the way it was worded causes you to speculate.
I'm happy to know that our speaker is calling for air quality and water use studies, Shireen.
Yes, I am too. Yeah. And I have to say, Mike Schultz is a person who has, I think, a really personal and deep, my senses, I wouldn't say he's fully delivered for the lake, but I think he's genuinely interested and trying to learn to advance solutions for the lake. Mm-hmm. So it's not a surprise to me that this is happening.
Yeah.
The other thing Speaker Schultz said is basically he didn't want to put his thumb on the scale one way or the other, you know, just leaving it for the public to weigh in.
Pretty different approach than Stuart Adams, sounds like.
Interesting. This is going to be, well, this will play out. We've got a land use referendum being considered, and we're going to see a lot more, hear a lot more about this.
But remember, Stuart's on the board, the MIDA board. So the MIDA board, you know, given the deal, has to make a decision one way or the other.
Interesting. John, I like what Representative Mike Kennedy is doing to block paychecks for Congress during future shutdowns. I think you said it was something like a gimmick or it's been tried before,
I mean, many other folks have done it. You know, it sounds great. You know, I'm all for the concept. It's just like, can you actually get it passed and actually get it done? And then you get into the nuances of what this means. One of the other challenges is you get some of these folks that have a lot of money and, you know, they can go without the paycheck, and others that
do not.
That do not. All of a sudden, it makes it one more challenge to run for Congress.
Yeah, that's
true. Just want them to have accountability for their decisions and actions. And we don't have term limits.
Fair districts might do that, but we don't have those either. So,
you like what Congressman Kennedy's doing here, Shane?
I do, but I agree with you, John. I think this is something, it feels like it's perennial. It comes up all the time, and I haven't really seen any momentum to get it done. But, it's a gimmick I love a bit, and it's a bit I support.
Yeah. Shireen, have you been following what Nate Bluhin's been doing on Middle East politics? He did an interview on this that got a little bit of news.
Yeah,
you follow this at all?
Unfortunately, I have, well, or maybe fortunately, I have to say this is stuff that I'm spending a little bit less time steeped in. I don't have time to really engage in long format podcasts like this or conversations. However, I think that what's interesting about it is while I definitely understand that folks like Hassan Piker can draw attention in certain ways, I feel like time is better spent making deep connections in community. And I have to say, Nate Bluhin's been doing quite a bit of that. He's very available in our community. He's been out knocking doors, just as everyone who is running for Congress should be doing. If you are not finding these people in community, out on doorsteps, having public events, I don't think they have much business doing it. I don't think podcasts kind of move people much one way or the other.
Interesting.
Part of the dynamics when it comes to being an elected official is there's two things. Are you, quote unquote, true to your convictions and you tell people what you stand for and who you are and let them vote or not? Or do you look to say, here's what the constituency cares about. I'm going to represent the issues that matter to them. Because at the end of the day, part of the thing you're trying to do is build a majority coalition. So what I read Nate Bluhin to say is, I want to be on the far extreme fringe and not get much done, but I'll be true to my convictions. And I don't think that's a winning message in Utah.
And what is it that you think Piker is fringe on?
No, I'm saying be true to your convictions for Nate. And if you look at how he served in the legislature, I think most folks would say he didn't get much done and he played out there on the fringe.
Mm, yeah. Interesting. Hey, let's do one last issue. Let's go to Cedar City. They've got a new announcement, a mine. It's of a mineral called antimony, which I love. There's a town called antimony in Utah.
There is.
This is a...
Have you spent time there?
Critical mineral. Will you know more about antimony, John?
Oh, I have family reunion there.
Oh, so, yeah, I love it. So, I should ask you.
But it's a very small place.
Okay. Well, it attracted Senator John Curtis, Governor Cox, to talk about this new smelting plant to refine antimony. It's a critical mineral for defense systems, battery storage, flame retardant materials, advanced electronics. This is so vintage Utah. And what I mean by that is we have a little bit of everything in this state. It's a terrific asset to our state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and that's one of the key things. We talked about China earlier. I think we need to harvest and mine for resources here to have a more resilient supply chain.
So. I'm just curious what the community has to say about this. It feels like this is a much different scenario, though there are certainly environmental impacts that are related to this as well. I'm curious if we know if the folks of antimony are concerned or if they feel like this has been done with their input.
Yeah. Shireen, they're saying that this would be the first domestic source of antimony and reduce our country's reliance on the mineral from other countries. So I just like this.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. I want to go back.
Okay, let's do it. We got one more minute.
You asked me a question about Hassan Piker. He's a self-described Marxist. So I would describe that as an extremist view.
Well, I'm just curious if you've engaged with listening to what he's talking about, because what he's really talking about are advancing workers' rights, ensuring that people have the ability to have fair wages for the work that they've put forward.
You just asked, is it an extremist view? And being self-described as a Marxist, I would say, is extremist in Utah.
Okay. I would actually say we've got a long history of places like Orderville that come from a very shared vision.
The law of consecration on you there, John.
Yeah, that's a voluntary thing versus a forced mandate from government.
Sounds like in a future both sides of the aisle, we got to talk about economic systems.
What an idea.
Let's do it. Hey, been a great conversation. Natalie Gochner with Shereen Gourbani and John Dougal. Our program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hi, listeners. This is Natalie Gochner. This episode will be available shortly at upr.org and wherever you get your podcast.